This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Mike Shope.
We were having a very serious conversation about mayonnaise here.
And the Bulldog.
And don't even talk to me about weed.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I guess it didn't matter that Thursday's game was on ABC Saturday's game was on ABC and last night's game was on ESPN. That is a massive number for hockey to pull. 9.3 million people. Wow, tremendous. What a week and a half it's been for the NHL and its star players and Team Canada and Team USA. Nothing against Team Finland and Team Sweden. Anyway, we're shifting gears, focusing on the NFL offseason here and the Bills' way forward, free agency, the draft in particular. And to help us do that, joining us right now on the Wester Hotline is Mike Renner from CBS Sports, one of their NFL and draft analysts. Mike, nice to talk to you again. How are things going?
Going great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Wonderful. Did you watch hockey last night?
I did not. I'm too deep in the football game. I was watching prospects last night.
I totally understand. So this draft, like kind of an overall here, and then we can get maybe into some more specifics and Bill's needs and ideas for them. But I get the sense that where the Bills are in this draft, with 2 second-round picks and the 30th pick, while you, of course, would like to be up higher, maybe they're in kind of a sweet plateau area in this draft. What do you think?
I think there is a lot of talent going into day two, and especially at like valuable positions. I think this year, uniquely, there's a lot of offensive tackles that are going to come off the board, or offensive linemen that are going to come off the board in the second round, like tackles that could be guard converts. And there's a lot of defensive ends as well that, you know, I think at least a third of the first round is going to end up being defensive ends. So like, there's a lot of talent rushing the passer in this draft class, defensive tackle talent as well. So the trenches, I think into day two, there's definitely a lot of guys, and I do think this class, it may not have top heavy, you know, it may not have elite superstars after, you know, a couple guys, but there definitely is depth.
Yeah, and that's music to a lot of Bills fans' ears here, because Mike, I mean, obviously we all watched the Super Bowl, we all watched the AFC Championship game, and saw the disparity between what the Bills were, or really were not able to do to slow down the Chiefs for yet another playoff loss at the hands of Mahomes and Reed, and then you see the Eagles just dismantle all of that. They couldn't get their quick game going. Obviously, the pass rush had a big part in that. So a lot of fans here in Buffalo, me included, because I mostly go, well, Josh Allen's got the ball in his hands with 2 minutes to go. I like my chances. And it sort of lets the defense off the hook. Not that I expect the Bills to be able to do what the Eagles have done year over year here in one off season, but hearing that it's rich on the defensive line is a very, very good thing, I think, for this Bills team. Do you agree?
Oh, 100%. Now, unfortunately, I think the other two positions that are probably the best positions in the draft, running back and tight end, are like pretty much off limits for the Bills. So they're not going to be taking advantage of either of those. But definitely defensive line, I wouldn't, you know, after how the postseason went, after what we saw with the Eagles, would not surprise me if those, you know, first, second rounders could all be defensive linemen.
And what kind of players do you think the Bills should be looking for? Obviously, edge guys are edge guys, right? Guys that can get around the edge and get to the quarterback in a hurry. Defensive tackle-wise, the Bills have kind of maybe set. I mean, Ed Oliver certainly is their number one as far as a penetrating up-the-field guy. They drafted Dwayne Carter last year in the third round, and he's a similar athletic profile. What I think maybe they should be looking for, tell me if you agree or disagree, is like the big guy to, you know, either replace or certainly supplement at the very least Daquan Jones.
Yeah, I do think that you watch them play run defense. It's a very uphill based scheme. They like to get in the backfield. They're not sitting on blocks, but it's also because they don't really have the sort of personnel to do so. So I do think that just getting some longer, bigger 3-4 defensive end types that can also play the nose tackle. And this class is chock full of them. This class is the one to, if you want to draft a guy just for his ability in run defense, there's a bunch of guys, especially that are going to be coming off the board in the second and third round. So if that's what they want to address, and I do think it is, right? I do think that you need some guys that are just at least reliable in that regard. Then at the end of the day, I think that's where you're going to end up targeting.
Yeah. Among the group that could be available at 30 or even into the second round, Kenneth Grant is a name from Michigan, sort of outshined by his more decorated teammate, Mason Graham, different type of player. Grant is a guy that certainly comes to mind. Thoughts on him and maybe some other guys if you're that far into your study on these guys?
Yeah, I think that's like a pipe dream for 30. I think he'll unfortunately be off the board before that, but that's like the type of guy. But into the second round, you have guys like Alfred Collins out of Texas. Into the third round, you got guys like Jamari Caldwell out of Oregon that are all kind of fitting that mold, among other names. There's just a lot of guys in this defensive tackle class specifically that can really get after the run. Tyreek Williams from Ohio State, I think, fits that bill in the second round as well. So it's a good class if you need run defenders. There's just a lot of them.
Another need the Bills, I think, will have here with all this focus on the defensive line, certainly, and it's not surprising, but number two corner across from Christian Benford. I mean, we're sort of wondering when he's going to get his contract extension this offseason or if he'll get one this offseason, because he certainly has earned it as the player he's become here after being a sixth-round pick 3 years ago, Mike. But opposite him, Rasul Douglas is getting older, and I thought he was kind of a weak link this past season anyway after arriving here midseason last year and really smashing, and he's a free agent. And so I wonder, you know, certainly you can go shopping for maybe that caliber of replacement in free agency. I saw Dane Jackson, a former Bill who just spent 1 year in Carolina, got released already today, and maybe that's an idea. But I'm wondering about the draft and a corner with maybe one of those second-round picks, if not their first-round pick.
Yeah, I think second-round in this corner class makes more sense. After kind of the real top group, which is, you know, Will Johnson from Michigan, Travis Hunter from Colorado, and then Jade Barron from Texas. That's like your three guys that I'd really only feel comfortable drafting in the first round. Everyone else either has like a major injury, like Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame or Savone Revel from ECU, or their tape's just such that it's good tape. They don't have great traits. Guys like Trey Amos fit that bill. Guys like Azaria Thomas from Florida State fit that bill, where like they just aren't going to be low 4.4, high 4.3 guys that you usually want to draft in the first round, but they still look like they're good football players. So I think all those guys will be day two guys. I think that's where, if you're going to address corner, just in this class in particular, it makes more sense in the second round.
I wonder, you know, the Bills are still feeling burned by missing on Kyer Elam, who was always a curious pick a few years ago to a lot of us here, Mike, because the Bills have mostly played zone with Sean McDermott here as their coach. And Elam came out of Florida, and the book on him was that he was a much better man player and just has not been able to catch up to really be a scheme fit here. And now we're into a point where I think off of this AFC title game loss that I mentioned and seeing what the Eagles did to Kansas City, and McDermott's even acting in accord with this with some of his offseason coaching staff hires. There's an assistant from New England whose name is escaping me right this moment, who's more of a man cover type guy. And I wonder if the Bills are going to be trying to find someone opposite Benford who can play a little bit more man than they are used to playing in Buffalo.
That'd be interesting because, I mean, obviously, I 100% agree on that Elam assessment. I could not believe he went to the Bills. I remember saying, I think pre-draft, I was like, well, he's not a good fit for the Bills. McDuffie's a good fit for the Bills. So, like, you know, at that point in the draft, that was kind of where they were both slotted to go. And then when they picked him, I was like, well, we'll see. Maybe, you know, maybe they'll right. change their stripes there. And obviously, we all know how that's unfortunately worked out. But I think in this draft, if you are going to go more man coverage, the guy I'd point to as a good second rounder is Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame. That's all he did at Notre Dame. I mean, that's the whole book on him is that he's a man corner who's like a little undersized and has a hip injury that, you know, hip injury for cornerbacks, a pretty big deal.
Yep.
So that's the worry why he's probably not going to go in the first round. But I remember that guy as a true freshman at Notre Dame was their best corner already. I love prospects that the moment they step on collegiate campuses, they're already, you know, high-end football players. Those are the guys I like to end up be high in the NFL draft because it speaks to just innate skill. So I think if you're going more man, that's the guy I'd point to as being a high-end man corner that could still be available in the second round.
Talking with Mike Renner, CBS Sports NFL and draft analyst here on WGR on the Wester Hotline. Mike, we're 10, 15 minutes into this, and maybe from your experience being on the station over the last few draft cycles, you might be stunned that I haven't asked you about wide receivers yet. It's been kind of we've been like a factory of wide receiver content here in the off seasons for maybe this is the third year running now, you know, Get Josh Allen premium weapons. 3 years ago, I was go replace Stephon Diggs, like get a guy that can be in line to replace Stephon Diggs, and they end up not really drafting that receiver until they had already traded away Stephon Diggs. Not that Keon Coleman is exactly a Stephon Diggs replacement, but you get the idea. How do you feel about this receiver class?
I just think it's thin, unfortunately. The more I watch kind of the second tier of wide receivers, the more I'm just like, you know, kind of just guys. I'd be very hard-pressed to see someone breaking out as like a day 2,000-yard receiver the way we saw like Ladd McConkey last year. It's thin. You'll probably see three come off the board only in the first round, and being Ted McMillan from Arizona, Luther Burden from Missouri, and then Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State. After those three, Matthew Golden might sneak in, the wide receiver out of Texas, but there's just not guys that look like number one wide receivers the way we saw last year. Every other guy after that has some big flaw. They're either like don't have speed or they have size, or they don't have size but they have speed. Like there's just not a true, you know, guy I could see being a number one wide receiver, even if he's a project after that. So unfortunately, by the time the Bills are on the clock, the wide receiver class may be over in terms of just like real guys who could even play a role for the Bills with what they have in place already.
One guy who you comes to mind when you mention, you know, that they're lacking some trait, and in this case it would be size, is Tez Johnson from Oregon, who kind of caught my attention at the Senior Bowl, both on the field and also just talking about his process. But he's, what, 155 pounds? I mean, I see him listed at CBS at 165, and maybe that's generous. I want to ask you like a philosophical question about this, because we heard some of the same thing, not that these guys are the same level of prospect, but Xavier Worthy was a big draft crush for me last year. Throughout this thing, it was the guy I really wanted the Bills to draft, so you can imagine how I reacted when they traded the pick to Kansas City and they picked him. And Johnson, but the knock on Worthy was he's small, he's not going to get off the line of scrimmage, that kind of thing. I wonder if in the NFL, as we're moving forward, whether or not it's that big a deal to be slight of build anymore. With the way the rules are put together, I just wonder. I mean, I know every guy's different, but Johnson is a guy that I'm curious about whether I can maybe get a guy that's getting dinged for something that isn't as important as it was even 5 or 10 years ago.
I do think where it does limit you to have a guy like that is the run game. If he's on the football field, he can't do the same things in the run game that, say, Keon Coleman can do, right? Right. You're not going to ask him to block a linebacker on a crack block. He gets, that's how Tank Dell, who was almost the same size as well, that's how he got hurt 2 years ago. So broke his leg blocking in the running game. So that's where it limits you. But I tend to agree. You worry about small guys that aren't elusive, that guys can get their hands on, then all of a sudden they're getting beat up. But Tez Johnson, you can't touch that guy. I mean, I saw at Senior Bowl, guys weren't even in press coverage getting their hands on him. So when that's the case, I don't think it's a big deal. So I think he's great. It's just how many slot receivers are the Bills going to stockpile, right? I feel like a lot of their guys' best position is the slot. They just don't have, like, outside wide receivers at this point. And in this class, there are some. They're not, like, electric outside of the guys I talked about off the top, but to me, he's very much going to be a redundant skill set if they were drafted to, like, a Khalil Shakir. Like, they're just similar players at this point.
Yep, that gets me off of the Tez Johnson train just about, I'll tell you, Mike. Thank you for that. You mentioned at the outset here the Bills not expected to be in the running back market or the tight end market, and I agree, but the running back class here is getting a lot of love. How many do you think will actually go in the first round? So I feel like you can cut both ways. If there's a lot of guys, you might feel like you can wait and get a guy later. So I don't know. Would you put an over under on two and a half, more or less than that, as far as first round running backs go?
See, I could see two. The only thing is that Ashton Gentry from Boise State's going in the first round. If I had to bet on a second one, it would be Amarion Hampton from North Carolina. It's such a good class. And all the teams drafting in the 20s at this point in time should be like your supposed sharp football teams that make smart football decisions that realize that you can get a James Cook in the late second, right? You can get high-end impact backs without a first-round pick. So I think you'll see those teams pass. I don't think you'll see one of those teams, even if running backs back in terms of evaluation and like what Saquon did last year and Derrick Henry and its value and whatever, I still think you'll see teams objectively look at this class and say, is Amarion Hampton a full round grade better than, say, Dylan Sampson from Tennessee, who you could probably have at pick 60? I don't think he is. So I think if I had to bet, I bet it's one, but I could see as many as three going in the first round because, gosh, it's just a really good running back class. There's three backs that are probably that good in some people's eyes.
And the quarterbacks, we know the names at the top, Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, I guess Milrow, Jackson Dart coming along. I've seen a lot of talk today and really this week about the Louisville quarterback whose name is escaping me right now, but I think he played 7 years of college football. He'll be 26 a month into next season. Is it Chow? Is that his name I'm thinking of? What do you think of the quarterbacks overall?
Yeah, it's an interesting class because while I don't think a lot of these guys have like high-end traits outside of Cam Ward, so I'm high on him. I think he's QB1. But they've played a ton of football. I mean, Tyler Shuck, the Louisville quarterback, is who you're getting at there, a 25-year-old. Guys played forever, just kept getting hurt. Dylan Gabriel from Oregon set the college football record with 63 starts in his career. The guys played more football than anyone else in college football history. Shedeur started for 4 years. Cam Ward started for 5 years. Jackson Dart started for 4 years. These guys have played a ton. So I think it's this class. There may not be a lot of first rounders. I have only one first round grade, but there's a lot of guys that if you draft in the second or third, they could probably start day one for you because they've played that much football and it wouldn't be that big a learning curve. Similar to always, I mean, there's a reason why Jayden Daniels and Bo Nix looked far more ready as a rookie than Caleb Williams. You know, when you've played as much ball as they have with at different stops and in different offenses, it just helps with your adjustment period to the NFL. So I think you'll see guys who are second and third round picks become rookie starters in this year's class. Now, will they become studs? I don't think so. I think, again, really the reason why I'm saying it's such an average class is because there are just such average tools in this class in terms of like arm talent, in terms of physical capability, but it wouldn't surprise me if you end up seeing a few of these guys become starters at least on their rookie contracts, just because they could be like, you know, Andy Dalton-esque, Derek Carr-esque, where they're not great, but they're serviceable.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because it's just these guys have been through the ringer themselves.
I feel like one of the maybe the most divisive might be too strong, but you know, there's a variety of opinions I'm already seeing early in the process here, Mike, about Jalen Milroe of Alabama. I read one piece today talking about how there's Jalen Hurts-esque traits there, including flaws in, you know, his passing game process. But you know, maybe you can teach him. It sounds a little like a smaller version of Anthony Richardson, maybe to some people. How do you feel about the Alabama quarterback?
I am not of the camp that I would play him at quarterback, truthfully. I think he's so dynamic as an athlete that I think he's leaving money on the table by not playing a different position. Now, obviously, he's got a strong arm. He is like a tier one runner at the position once he gets to the NFL, and that has a lot of value. It impacts games, as you obviously know in Buffalo, as you know, by playing the Ravens. Like, it stinks to play a quarterback who's that dynamic as a runner. It just, you can lose and he cannot do anything with his arm. And it's just, there's nothing you can do to stop guys like that sometimes. But he's so inaccurate. I watch his tape and I'm just like, if he did not run a 4.3, you would not even know his name. The guy wouldn't be starting college football. He's just so behind the eight ball developmentally. And he has tiny hands, which I think still matters in terms of just your ability to be accurate. If you have really small hands that can't consistently grip the ball 8 3/4 inches, smaller than anyone else starting in the NFL right now, and he already flutters a ton of footballs, it's like, I don't think that's ever going to change unless he wants to wear gloves. So I'm not eyeing him. Someone will probably take him day two, but I know, like, Jalen Hurts coming out had big hands. He was accurate.
Right.
You at least knew that. That's a good starting point for a guy who could run the way he could. I don't see the starting point for Milroe, unfortunately.
Real quick before you go, I forgot what we were talking about, corners. I wanted to mention safety, because that could be, I think, a sneaky need for the Bills. I mean, they've got guys that I think they can count on to start, including Cole Bishop, who was a second-round pick last year. I was kind of disappointed he didn't get, you know, he didn't get on the field, didn't earn a spot earlier this past season. But I would think that he's penciled in at one of those spots, and Taylor Rapp is returning. But Malachi Starks, I think, is interesting. And the giant from South Carolina, Emin Wurry, is very intriguing to me. Just quick thoughts on both guys before we let you go.
Yeah, I love adding a safety to that defense, especially in this class where Starks, Emin Wurry, and then I'd also throw Kevin Winston from Penn State are all guys that play the run really well from a deep alignment. Like, you see them fill from depth and get to ball carriers in a hurry, whether it's like quarterbacks pulling the ball on option runs and leaking out the back door, or just running backs bouncing it out. Those guys close to ball, they're all high-end athletes that tackle well in space, which to me is just something that the Bills, they need. I watched DeMar Hamlin's tape, and it's like, nothing against him, he does not have that ability to really come downhill and be an enforcer in the running game to clean up stuff like that. And I think that it would go a long way to what they want to do. They want to play too high. They want to keep those safeties back. They want to put caps on opposing offenses. But right now, I just don't think they have the guys that can play the run well enough to do so. So I've mocked them in Man Worry because of that, because I think it'd be just a nice fit with what they want, and because I just don't think they have it at that position. So Man Worry is uniquely the dude in that regard, because he's 227 pounds. He is a massive safety. And I think you'll see at the combine, he's going to be pretty freakish there.
He's like maybe bigger than the Bills linebackers almost. Like,
actually, I think he is.
Bernard's pretty undersized, but still. What do you think of Cole Bishop real quick?
I liked him coming out, and I was a little surprised he didn't play. Same camp as you.
Yep.
Safety transition from college to the NFL, it is a position where you can't make mistakes. So a lot of times people will slow walk safeties into the league just because if you don't have the defense down pat, you're a liability back there. We saw some rookie safeties, Kalen Book, most notably in Houston. Like, he made some great plays in the football. He gave up some awful big plays on that defense just because it's a tough position. So I don't think I would be writing him off anytime soon. I still think he was a guy that, I mean, a lot of things I'm saying that, you know, coming up and filling in the run game, he was able to do at Utah in a way that Bill safety didn't do last year.
Mike, thanks a lot for the time. We especially appreciate you burning like a half an hour, a happy hour on a Friday with us, man. So good stuff as always, and we look forward to our next visit.
For sure. Thanks so much for having me.
Mike Renner, CBS Sports NFL and draft analyst here. Find him at Mike Renner. You get it? It's just his name on the Twitter/X machine. There you go. All right, let's hit up a timeout. We'll get the bottom of the hour update here, and I don't know, maybe more on Four Nations face-off, the way forward for the Sabres. Maybe I'll focus on that specifically as we get back going, but if you got anything on Four Nations, feel free. The door's open on football, too, after our conversation with Mike, if you want to dig in on that. But been a lot of hockey, and rightly so, with the success of the Four Nations Face-Off. Those ratings numbers are preposterously large for ESPN, if you haven't heard. Over 9 million people watched. I thought 4.4 million on Saturday was really big. Man, I mean, they doubled it. So hats off, NHL. Great job on that, drawing people in to that tournament. 803-0550 is the number. Mike is on vacation. I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
These atmospheres in Montreal, being the enemy there, but being here and not getting the cheers that usually get when we play here. And I mean, it was just an unbelievable experience. This whole week has just been such a memorable one, and something that, you know, I've learned so much personally. And just to be a part of this group and this team and be a part of USA Hockey has been, you know, better than I expected.
That is one of the absolute stars born during the Four Nations Face-Off, Brady Tkachuk of the Ottawa Senators. Look, hockey, he's got a big contract. He's a captain of a team. I don't know that the average hockey fan was paying that much attention to Brady Tkachuk before this tournament. And certainly the casuals had to be, I mean, just totally sucked in by the Tkachuk brothers show in this tournament Saturday night with the fights to start off the round robin game against Team Canada. I feel like Brady Tkachuk, I mean, Matthews got the cup already from last year in Florida and the finals the year before that. Like, he's kind of been, you know, the flag's planted. People know who he is. His brother, I think, did a lot to raise his profile throughout this tournament. Just excellent. I mean, he was just wrecking everyone. Shift in, shift out. Just what a physical force, and a talented player at that too. So really, really tremendous opportunity for these guys to get on the map with just sports fans, if not, you know, again, hockey fans. The name Tkachuk and these two brothers are not strangers to casual hockey fans, but I think maybe you didn't know just what kind of force they could be. They were just tremendous. And I think with the number of people who got into this, that the Olympic Games in just a little around a year from now are just going to be really highly anticipated. That'll be in Italy, so you know the time difference is going to prove to be have some challenges. It might be tough to count on the kind of numbers of people tuning in that we saw watching these games the last two times that Team Canada and Team USA played. But just a tremendous, tremendous show. I'm blown away by that ratings number. We had a call earlier today. Positing that he would predict that more people watch these games than the Stanley Cup Finals Game 7 last year. And in America, that was definitely true. I think Game 7 outpaced this game last night, even in Canada. But here in the U.S., doubled it. I mean, just blew it out of the water. Really, Saturday night was only 4.4 million. That was more than watched Game 7 between Florida and Edmonton last year, and that 9.9 or 9.3 number, 925, whatever it is exactly, Zach mentioned it. Like, it's the highest rated non-Olympic hockey game. Just a tremendous, tremendous thing. And to think that this thing was ramping up, this tournament, the Four Nations Face-Off was ramping up, and there were plenty of people, prominent people, hockey fans, just sort of rolling their eyes. Oh, great. You know, the NFL just ended. Basketball's in their all-star break. And I'm going to have this go-through-the-motions tournament going on. I never really thought quite that. I still was blown away by how intense it was. I didn't think it would be all the way there, but it was really game in, game out, shift in, shift out. The intensity was obvious. So we'll see if we get, you know, more attention than we have in past years on the Stanley Cup playoffs once they get there, because that's your next opportunity to see anything from a passion and effort and intensity standpoint that will approximate what you were watching in this tournament. I mean, to think you're going to get that night to night in the regular season, I mean, you just don't. It's not possible. But these players, to their credit, I mean, just full bore. And we'll see how much fallout there is from guys maybe not being ready to rejoin their NHL teams as soon as tomorrow. Matthew Tkachuk didn't play beyond a few shifts. He didn't play really at all beyond the first period of last night's game. His brother did the same thing on Monday. Brady, he played this entire game last night, but I don't know. I haven't seen any word about Ottawa ramping up here and what the expectation is there for him to be ready to go tomorrow or this weekend anyway for the Senators. But we know Shea Theodore, defenseman, important defenseman for Vegas, got hurt in the very first game of the tournament. He's out for the rest of the regular season, and we'll see just how many other guys that came through this. I mean, Austin Matthews, what was it termed? Did he have general body soreness or something, they said, I think, that held him out of the game on Monday? I mean, the U.S. didn't need it anyway. But he was back, and really, I thought, despite what the final goal of the tournament looked like, I thought Matthews was one of the very best players on the ice, at both ends of the ice. But he seemed to be nursing something. So we'll see how ready he is. Like all these guys, you know, these teams are in, some of them. I know Buffalo. Some of these teams are in playoff races. Ottawa and Detroit, two teams that the Sabres were lumped in with at the bottom of the Atlantic Division, along with Montreal. They're in playoff spots as hockey ramps back up here and gets started, which is something we here were dreaming about, but they are there. I mean, they're clinging to wild card spots. It's tight. There's a lot of teams around them in the standings. Columbus is only a point or two back. The Rangers are only a point or two back. Boston is on the outside looking in at this point, so they'll probably have something to say about it too. But, man, tough racket if you're like Ottawa and Detroit are not on the playoff drought streaks that the Sabres are on, but still they've been in years-long rebuilds here and to varying degrees have gotten a lot right. Ottawa, when they're healthy, they're still missing. Josh Norris is a big loss when he's not there, and he's had injury problems for a lot of his career. But imagine, like, you're a Sabres fan, and you've got Dahlin in this tournament, and you're trying to end what is currently a 13-year playoff drought. But for the sake of argument, let's say they switch places with Ottawa. So they're in the wild card spot. And this tournament comes along, and of course you want Dahlin to go, and of course Dahlin wants to go and be a part of this thing, and something happens to him. Like what happened to Theodore in the first game of the tournament, and he's out for the rest of the regular season. Just imagine how we'd be feeling here, riding a 13-season playoff drought, and you're in a spot, this break comes up, and that happens. That would be really tough. That'd be a lot of bitterness, I'm sure. I hope that that sort of problem cropping up, specifically with Vegas, but maybe other teams too, not that I'm just going to have sympathy for Vegas. I mean, they just won the cup recently, and they circumvent the cap all the time with long-term injured reserve, so cry me a river. But still, that kind of scenario is what you are potentially signing up for, losing a vital player in the midst of a playoff race. Man, that would be extremely hard on the organization and Sabres fans. Again, pie in the sky, because Sabres are not in a playoff race. They are way on the outside looking in as they get back to it tomorrow against the Rangers. 803-0550 is the number. Mike is away this week. I am the Bulldog. Back after this. You're listening to WGR. Sorry. Responding to one of my adoring followers on Twitter, who's encouraging me to get my blood pressure checked because windburn from the I don't know. I'm just red. I don't know. Nobody else looks like this. I'm red. But I've recently been to the doctor. I'm the picture of health. That's not accurate, but I'm good. I'm not, my blood pressure's fine. I don't know. I'm red. I just, it's the adrenaline of doing the show. I don't know what to tell you. But, you know, thanks for watching the YouTube or on the Twitch there. However you found us, we're glad you found us. Seriously, we are really glad that we're doing this, because I know a lot of our audience in Canada has been lost to us for many years once we made an app switch a few years ago, and I've effectively locked out a lot of our audience. And, you know, this is a way for you to catch the show, YouTube or again with the kids on the Twitch there. So glad that we're doing it, even if I do. I mean, it might be good for ratings if I did have a heart attack on the air, but I don't think it's imminent. I'm pretty sure that I'm all set, so should be good. Hey, quick note, a lot of hockey today. If you're going to the hockey game tomorrow, 5:30 start, plant a little seed here for you. I am once again very flattered and thrilled to be taking part in a massive Tom Petty tribute night at Ironworks, right next door to the parking garage there. And that is supposed to start at 8 p.m. So, I mean, could the timing be any better? The hockey game is 5:30. And, look, don't worry, if the game goes to overtime, this is going to be like a three-hour show. Tons of Petty material, some of the best singers and players in town taking part. It's my friends in the Leroy Towns Band are the core group, and there's a list of, I don't even know, 30 people who sit in, most of them extremely talented, and then there's me. But I get to play a couple of songs on the guitar, and I'm very excited about that. So stop in there. It'll be a big crowd, but hopefully there's room for you. Just make a note of it. Swing on by and see some fantastic music from my friends there, and a great Tom Petty night. Whether you're a Petty freak or not, I think you'll find something to enjoy there. So just a note for you on that. All right, we'll keep the hockey conversation going here into the next hour. Paul Hamilton's thoughts on the Four Nation face-off finale last night, straight ahead here on WGR.